Chapter 6, The Fish Head Murder. Declan had dedicated the past few weeks to exploring the rich and diverse native plant life of New Brunswick. Inspired by recent events and a visit to an extraordinary garden that was owned by the unfortunate gardener, he felt it was the perfect time to deepen his understanding of his home province. However, his plans were about to be interrupted. While Declan was engrossed in a book at the city's public library about milkweed plants and their vital relationship with the monarch butterfly. Just then, the main door of the library swung open with a sudden force. It was Riley Cochran, his cousin from his father's side, striding purposefully towards him. Declan thought to himself, "Something must be up. I haven't seen Riley in about a year." When Riley approached Declan's table, he quickly pulled out a chair and glanced around to ensure no one was listening, reminiscent of a scene from a spy novel. Leaning in, he whispered in a low tone, "Declan, I just spoke with a friend who was crossing the walking bridge. He saw one of his friends fishing and overheard him talking to a guy on a boat. Apparently, this guy mentioned that another fisherman on the opposite side of the bridge reported seeing a hand sticking out of the mud.
They called the police about it. I think that's what he said. Anyway, something big is happening on the north side of the walking bridge. I just thought you would be interested in the info.
Are you?" Declan looked up and replied, "Yes, I am very interested. And is it possible for you to say that all over again?" Declan chuckled and went on to say,
"Thanks for the heads up, Riley. And it is really good to see you again. We have got to get together for a coffee one of these days. How's your family doing?"
Just then, Declan's phone started to vibrate as he had put it on silent mode when he entered the library. It was Corporal Woods, so Declan picked up his phone and answered, whispering into the phone, "Corporal Woods, what's up?" Corporal Woods replied, "Why are you whispering? Are you in church or something?" Declan chuckled, "No, I am in the library. You know that big building you never go in." Corporal Woods snapped back, "Very funny. Listen, we have an issue on the north side, over by the bridge abutment on that open mud point where everyone fishes from. There seems to be a hand sticking out of the mud. Not sure if there is a body attached. Before you ask, yes, I think they're dead," Declan answered. "Understood. I am making my way down there now. I should be there in about 15 to 20 minutes. Are you still going to be there when I arrive?" Corporal Woods responded with a confident voice, "I think I am going to be here most of the day. See you in a few minutes." Declan tucked his phone into his pocket, thanked Riley for the information, and let him know he would call him later, before swiftly exiting the library. He hurried on foot towards the murder scene. As he approached the south end of the walking bridge, he observed a sizable crowd forming at the north end. The TikTok social media film crew had arrived, the modern-day paparazzi of crime scenes. "Wonderful," he thought to himself. As Declan closed in on the crowd, that was now substantial. He could see what looked like Corporal Wood standing on the muddy point just south of the north side of the walking bridge. At least, it looked like him. There was something different about him that Declan could not put his finger on. Upon reaching the police barrier, Declan spotted Constable Campbell skillfully managing the crowd. Navigating his way through, Declan approached him and politely asked, "Could you inform Corporal Woods that I've arrived?" With a chuckle, Constable Campbell replied, "This should be interesting," and turned towards the bridge railing, yelling as loud as he could, "Hey, there's a young man up here asking for Corporal Woods. Has anyone seen Corporal Woods?" A booming voice echoed across the mudflat, cutting through the air with authority. "Very funny. What's going on, Constable?" Campbell responded promptly. "Declan is up here with me, Sergeant. Would you like me to send him down?" Woods replied decisively, "Yes, send him down. I'll meet him at the bridge abutment." Declan looked at Constable Campbell and said, "Wow, Woods got promoted. That's very cool." Campbell replied, "He got promoted last week, but left his sense of humor behind. With that, he pointed to the end of the bridge. That's where you will find the path down to the bridge abutment. Then he lifted the tape, allowing Declan to pass under the police barrier. Declan started to make his way down to see now newly promoted Sergeant Woods. Declan thought to himself, "It's good to see, as Woods is one of the most professional individuals I have ever met." As Declan reached the bottom of the winding path that led down to the bridge abutment, he noticed Sergeant Woods over by the abutment. Woods gestured for Declan to approach, cautioning him, "Watch your step, Declan. The mud can be quite slippery." Just then, a distinct thud echoed in the distance as someone lost their footing, landing face first in the mud flat. The voice, muffled, called out, "Oh man, I've got some in my mouth, and the aftertaste," as you could hear him spitting out chunks of mud.
"Oh man, and the aftertaste."
Sergeant Woods greeted Declan as he arrived at the site, gesturing toward the area where the remains of the deceased individual was located. "Follow me, Declan, and please, watch your step," Sergeant Woods instructed as he started walking along a very defined path created by the investigating team. Sergeant Woods went on to say, "You are not going to believe this one. We have what looks to be a male around 35 years old, with what looks to be a big dent in his forehead and a stab wound to the back. The coroner gives us an estimated time of death of 2 days ago." As they approached the site, Declan could see piles of mud and clay around a 2-meter-wide hole that was approximately only 30 centimeters deep. "Wow, talk about a shallow grave," remarked Declan. Sergeant Woods acknowledged, "Someone was in a hurry to cover him up." Declan spent a few moments visually searching the area for clues. Basically, anything unknowingly disturbed or left behind by the assailant, or should I say, assailants. Sergeant Woods noticed Declan furiously typing on his phone, creating a note-to-self list of possible clues. Notes to self, shallow grave, meaning perhaps the murderer was seen and had to move fast. Looks like the victim was wearing a fishing jacket. So did this happen during a fishing trip? Possible time of death, 2 days ago? What was the weather like? Has someone been reported missing in the past few days? How did the victim make it to the site from the bridge? Was he seen by any security cameras? Or did he walk along the river, working his way up to this spot? Name of the individual that found him? Woods got promoted. At that moment, the on-site forensic team leader called for Sergeant Woods to approach the now vacant hole. The forensic team leader, a highly professional young woman named Bridget Woods, unrelated to Sergeant Woods, was kneeling beside the muddy pit, carefully examining an object in her hands. As she lifted it, it became clear that it was a wallet. She opened it and extracted a driver's license and read the name aloud. Jim Whitlock, age 39. Declan noticed that Sergeant Woods was lost in thought. "I recognize that name, but I can't quite place it. I remember seeing it in one of the reports I reviewed this past week. It'll come to me eventually. Bridget, is there anything else in the wallet?" Bridget responded, "Yes, there are several debit cards, a platinum credit card, and about $375 in cash. Additionally, there's a New Brunswick driver's license with the address, 193 Gibson Street, Fredericton." Declan quickly checked his maps app. "Hey, Sergeant Woods, it seems that the address we're looking for doesn't exist. According to my app, it looks like it's actually a walking path on Gibson Street," said Declan in a confused tone. At that moment, Sergeant Woods, with a look of realization, responded, "Now I remember where I heard that name before. It was mentioned in one of our recent organized crime update reports. It turns out our victim was suspected of being a member of a crime group. However, if I recall correctly, he was more involved in administrative and bookkeeping." Declan looked at Sergeant Woods and asked the question, "If he was fishing, where is all his gear?" He has on his fishing vest with all the tackle but no rod, reel, or net. Sergeant Woods looked over at Bridget. Can your team widen the search area, including under the bridge working north? I will have my team search down the river 200 meters or so. Bridget responded, on it. About 20 minutes later, we heard a call from Bridget's crew coming from beneath the bridge. It turns out they may have found the missing fishing equipment. Declan looked at Sergeant Woods and said, in an unusual, confident voice, you know what this means? With the money in his wallet and the fishing equipment found, this now looks like a crime of premeditated murder or a murder of opportunity? Sergeant Woods replied, what about a crime of passion? Unlikely, replied Declan, explaining, it is not likely that someone would follow their victim down to the river and murder them out of passion in such an open and public area, then go about placing them in a shallow grave, again in a public area. Also, consider this. He was fishing, which means that all of this happened during daylight hours, again in a very public area. No, I think you can put the passion motive aside. Declan paused for a few seconds and said, no, you can also rule out robbery. He paused again and stated in a firm voice, premeditated could be ruled out as well. This area is very public and not somewhere that you would consider carrying out such a violent event. That only leaves one other option, rage-type murder. That said, I could be wrong. Sergeant Woods looked at Declan and Bridget. What we need to do now is track down and talk to his family or friends and rule out the passion option. Declan, can you help with that? Give us a day to contact them and break the news before knocking on their doors. Also, could you send me a written report? Nothing fancy, just a well-crafted email will do. I will confirm the organized crime option of this mystery. And Bridget, if you can, work on the forensics package with a priority, going to possible biometrics on the fishing equipment and time and cause of death. Let's say in 2 days, we can get together in my office and lay out what we have found. Sergeant Woods looked at both of them and went on to say, sounds good. See you both in a couple of days. And Declan, in advance, thanks for the unofficial help. With that, the three of them went off in their own directions to start gathering all of the information required to crack this mystery wide open. See you at the conclusion. Interim Coroner's Report, City Coroner, Acting, Bridget Woods, dated September 2024.
Summary. On the 09th September at approximately 08:35 hours, a 911 call was received reporting an alleged stabbing on the north side of the Bilthorpe Walking Bridge at the southern end of the bridge. The victim was buried in a shallow, muddy grave on the obvious mud point jetting out into the river. Estimated time of death, 07th September, between the hours of 0800, 1100 hours. The victim cause of death, blunt force trauma to the head. The stab wound was created after the victim was had passed away. Para 1. Victim identification. Jim Whitlock, age 39, of Fredericton, NB. However, the address on the driver's license is fictitious. Para 2. The body was found generally in good condition, excluding the cause of death. Para 3. All of Jim Whitlock's personal belongings will be held until the next of kin, NOK, can be located. If the investigators requires any of his personal belongings for the ongoing investigation, they can be found in the city's coroner's office using ref number 33492. Para 4. The biometrics removed from the fish equipment found on site has three distinct sets of fingerprints, one from the victim and one set from Eric Douglas, found in file number 8 or 86E99, and a third set of prints identified as Constable John Canmore of the city's police force. It is recommended that any new constable receives basic training on crime scene operations. Bridget Woods, City Coroner, Acting, Interim Coroner's Report, dated September 10, 2024. Disclaimer. This is a fictional report, part of the Crow Murder Mysteries book.
Organized crime report dated 3 Sept 2024. Sergeant Steele Fetterbed, Organized Crime Task Force, Para 1. This conversation about organized crime in the city is a spring-loaded conversation full of twists and turns. Most of the city's police force are coiled springs just waiting for the right second to launch on possible organized crime elements. That said, there is cause for concern, and our diligent actions will keep them at bay. The following data was collected during the past 3 months. Sub-Para A. Several local names have come to light and are connected to syndicates suspected of working in the city. All of the names below have detailed files that can be downloaded directly from the task force using the file numbers connected to their name. 1. Tim Wall, suspected in online pushing scams, F45OI34. 2. Red Splatter, real name unknown at this time, Red0329B. 3. Kim Tong, part of the Asian division of the Triads, Triads0093. 4. Eric Douglas, accountant and suspected enforcer, Wuzuo431. 5. Dave Gallant, enforcer and fixer, Thorwuzuo432. 6. Jim Whitlock, accountant and suspected enforcer, Wuzuo433. Para 2. There has been no new development on any of the 6 ongoing case files. If you require a briefing, submit your memo in triplet and allow for the 25-day delay before any briefing. So plan ahead if you are looking for more information. Please note that only unclassified material will be briefed. If you hold a higher classification, such as secret, you will be granted access to the complete file. Organized Crime Report. Dated 3 Sept 2024. Sergeant Steele Featherbed Organized Crime Task Force. Disclaimer. This is a fictional report, part of the Crow Murder Mysteries book.
Declan found himself back in the city's library, where he loved to spend his spare time. It turns out that there weren't any family members in this part of Canada for Jim Whitlock, the victim of what Declan called the Fish Head Murder. This meant there was nothing he needed to do to get ready for the upcoming meeting with Sergeant Woods and Bridget Woods. Again, no relation. Sergeant Woods inadvertently disclosed the name linked to the second set of fingerprints found on the fishing rod and equipment. This revelation set Declan on a new mission, to gather as much information as possible about Eric Douglas. His investigation painted a vivid picture of a passionate local fisherman renowned for his larger-than-life tales, as shared by fellow sports enthusiasts in the area. Douglas was not merely an avid angler, he was a borderline extreme sportsman. Legends surrounded his river escapades, including stories of him strapping 8-foot-long 2x4 to his boots, enabling him to navigate the perilous, thin ice during the early and late winter months, where others would hesitate to fish. It was said that he would arrive at the river an hour before dawn, ensuring he secured the best fishing spot. Rumor had it that he could taste the water, discerning whether it was spawning season for any given fish species. With a mere glance at the water, he could determine the ideal lure to use based on the species present. One particularly grand tale suggested that he could touch the water and feel the fish as they moved up and down the river. However, the most critical information was his notorious short temper and fierce competitive streak when it came to fishing. For his part, Declan already had a strong suspicion about the murder and was eager to present his findings to Sergeant Woods. With that in mind, Declan packed up his books and left the library, making his way down Queen Street toward the city police headquarters for his meeting with Sergeant Woods and Bridget. Thinking to himself, I wonder if Sergeant Woods or Bridget have any new information. Once Declan arrived at the police station, he was warmly greeted at the front doors by Constable Canmore, his escort for the day, With a smile, Declan remarked, "John, how did you end up with escort duties?" He chuckled lightly, enjoying the moment. Constable John Canmore replied with a grin, "Let's just say I picked up something I shouldn't have." John led Declan to the coffee room, where he grabbed a fresh cup before continuing to Sergeant Wood's new office. After topping off his coffee, Declan was escorted to the conference room adjacent to Wood's office, where Bridget was already waiting. She appeared deep in thought, studying a tall flipboard filled with images and notes. This must have been Sergeant Wood's investigation board, meticulously organized to track leads and developments. For Declan, this was all rather routine. He kept all the information locked away in his photographic memory. Sergeant Woods entered from the adjacent office, greeting them warmly. "Good day, Bridget and Declan. It's great to see you both made it." Bridget quickly interjected, "Sorry about the comment regarding Constable Canmore in my report. I didn't mean to get him in trouble." Sergeant Woods reassured her, "No worries. We all have to learn our lessons, sometimes the hard way." Turning to Declan with a hint of sarcasm, he added, "So Declan, I suppose you've miraculously solved my case." Declan responded confidently, "Absolutely." Sergeant Woods chuckled, "I was just kidding. Wait, you solved the case?" Declan explained, "It's simply a matter of eliminating the impossible, leaving us with the possible." He paused briefly before continuing. "First, we can rule out a crime of passion since our victim has no family or partners in the area. Second, organized crime is unlikely, as they wouldn't attempt to bury the victim in such a public location." Declan paused again, then proceeded, "Was this premeditated? Unlikely, as there seemed to be no plan whatsoever." As he removed items from the board, he elaborated, "So, what do we have left? Rage and chaos. Our murderer is someone with those tendencies. He's highly competitive and won't back down. This murder wasn't planned or driven by passion. It was an act of violence fueled by rage." Declan concluded, "The murderer is Eric Douglas. He had a clear motive and his fingerprints were found on the fishing gear, placing him at the scene. His attempt to cover up the murder was poorly executed, driven by sheer rage. I believe our victim was at his favorite fishing spot and refused to leave, which infuriated Eric. In a fit of anger, he likely used his fishing knife to commit the crime. I suspect this knife, probably his favorite, is still at his residence as he would never part with it. If you bring him in, present all the evidence, and provoke him just a bit, he'll likely confess," Declan chuckled. Sergeant Wood smiled and said, "I reached the same conclusion after reviewing the coroner's report. By the way, Bridget, excellent work on the report. Plus, the latest organized crime task force update was helpful. As you mentioned, when you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth." Later that day, Eric Douglas was arrested and charged with murder. Conclusion of the Fishhead Murder. Thanks for reading and have an outstanding day.